What difference at this point does it make?
Oh, shut up.
If you've got health insurance, you can keep it. If you like your health care plan, you will keep your plan.
If you've got health insurance, you like your doctor, you like your plan, you can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan.
I'm as mad as hell, but I'm not going to take this anymore.
Hey, it's Saturday morning, and this means this is another episode of the Unite IE radio program. My name is John Hancock, and I'm here with my co-host Don Dix and Greg Britton. And, you know, this weekend is a very special anniversary. Do you guys know what the anniversary is?
It's your 23rd wedding anniversary?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the most important anniversaries in history.
Am I allowed to use Google?
Yeah, but I don't think we want to wait that long. But no, it is the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta, which was signed in June 15th in 2015. And this document really was the foundation of individual freedom. It was the first time that the people, they were the barons, but they stood up against the authority of the king and forced him to concede certain rights to them. And this meant that in England, at least, which is different than on the continent, that for the first time in writing, the king and government was also under the law, just like the average citizen.
What a great concept. Maybe we can apply that here.
Well, let me ask, those people that stood up to the king, did they keep their heads?
Yes, they did keep their heads. And
that's notable.
But at first, well, one of the main reasons is because, John the First, who did this, when they first signed it, he went ahead and as soon as he got away from them, he reneged on the promises. There was almost a verge of a civil war. And then fortunately for England, John ended up dying. So his son was only 9 years old, and the people were able to instill this in British and English society.
So what about the legacy of the Magna Carta do we enjoy today here in the Inland Empire? What is it about the Magna Carta that is relevant to us?
Well, I think what we should do is bring in our guest on this, because we have James C. Bennett, who will be with me this Sunday out in LA at the Magna Carta commemoration event. It's a 2-day event. If you're in LA, go to this. It's produced by the American Freedom Alliance. You can go to AmericanFreedomAlliance.com for information. We're going to have the former Prime Minister John Howard of Australia. We got professors. It's going to be a very educational. And on our side, on the conservative side, one of the problems is we aren't educated enough. So when our children who are being, basically indoctrinated by college professors, they come to us and they throw these facts at us. As conservatives, we're just kind of like, I don't know. So this, you need to educate, and this is a good step. So I would like to bring someone who is really an expert on the English-speaking countries called the Anglosphere, James C. Bennett. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you, John.
Pleasure to have you with us. Thanks.
Pleasure to be here.
And you have a great background, not only in history, but you are an anthropologist. You've been involved in space travel and just all-around, what they call a Renaissance man.
Well, I've done more than one or two things, anyway.
So, going back to Don's question, what is the relevancy of the Magna Carta and basically the principles that developed in England through the Middle Ages to America now?
Well, I think the most basic one is the due process rights that we enjoy under the Constitution and under our Bill of Rights. The key provision, which is no person may be denied of their life, liberty, and process except by due process of law, is basically taken verbatim out of Magna Carta, out of clause, I think it's 29 in Magna Carta, which is also still on the law books in England. So this whole idea that the king can't just decide that he wants to have you killed or that, nice castle there, I think I'll take it. There at least has to be a trial, evidence, law, verdict, etc. And that put England in the year 1215 ahead of where half of Europe was in the middle of the 20th century. They also abolished judicial torture, which no longer seems like that big of a deal to us. But at the time on the continent of Europe, they had this doctrine that nobody could be found guilty of a crime unless they confessed to it. And on the other hand, torture was legal. So the standard practice on the continent was once you decided that somebody would be put on trial, you tortured them until they confessed, and that was considered a fair trial.
Wouldn't that have been so much better than the O.J. trial?
Well, there's something about that.
It would shorten things up a bit. Yeah.
Judicial efficiency.
Right. But from 1215 on in England, they had to put someone on trial, and they could not torture them. You had a torture warrant, which is a sort of a Jack Bauer kind of thing. The king could issue it in special circumstances of national security or whatever, and it was used occasionally, but it couldn't be used as a part of an ordinary trial thing. And the whole, it's now the case that you can't extradite someone to a place where they might be tortured, et cetera. All stems out of Magna Carta. So,
well, and also important for the future American colonies and the United States in general was the concept of the principle of no taxation without representation.
Yes, and that came out of Magna Carta as well, that the basically no tax could be levied without the consent of the people. And it also, there were charters across the continent where the king would grant, various rights to his subjects, but they didn't have any enforcement mechanism, whereas Magna Carta had what became Parliament as the enforcement mechanism.
So
and they said, ultimately it led to the point where the consent of the people was required. In Britain and the Commonwealth countries where you see it saying the crown versus so-and-so in a trial, or they say the crown will do this. Crown doesn't mean the king. The crown means the king and parliament together. That's the definition of it, in fact.
So
and that was the beginning of our idea of the supremacy of the representatives of the people.
Based on what both you and John have said about these concepts within the Magna Carta that have been incorporated into essentially our constitution and body of law, if you will, I would imagine that this is something that's taught in our elementary and junior high schools, and that given that this is the weekend for the anniversary of this 800-year-old document upon which a lot of our liberties are based on, it's probably celebrated in every elementary and junior high school across the country, right?
Ha, ha, ha. You would think.
It's not?
And in the 19th century, it pretty much was. Mm-hmm. But, in an era where people can say, our Constitution, which is, just a bit over 200 years old, was an old piece of parchment written by rich white slave owners 200 years ago and is no longer relevant. You can imagine what an 800-year-old document is considered. No, I'm sure most people don't know what it is, don't know what its significance is, but then again, I'm sure a lot of our students would be hard-pressed to explain what the Constitution is and why that is.
I'd be interested in the poll of college graduates, recent college graduates. How many know what the Magna Carta is?
Yes.
I'll take the under 3% bet on that.
Well, you might be safe on that, I'm afraid. In general, very little of our history of your heritage is taught at all anymore. They kind of cherry-pick the worst examples and then teach them out of context, and that is about it. Really, the first step in shoring up the liberties and kind of ensuring that we might have them in two or three generations is to get back to the point where the basics are taught, and they're taught in an objective and real manner.
Which is the whole point of your event that you're participating in this coming weekend. We're going to take a break real quick. We are visiting with James Bennett, who is one of the featured speakers of an event in Los Angeles this coming weekend, which celebrates the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta, a very important document that contributed to our founding principles. We will be back after this brief message from the organization that sponsors the first half hour of the Unite IE radio program, Wholesale Capital.
Who do you trust with your real estate financing? We all get our money the same place. We all have the same basic programs. The question is, who has the knowledge and, more importantly, the integrity to advise you with your best interest in mind? Hi, this is Ed Hoffman, President of Wholesale Capital Corporation, your local direct mortgage lender, and host of the main event, heard Saturdays and Sundays right here on 590 The Answer. For over 20 years, Wholesale Capital has been putting your interests first. What would I advise you if you were my brother or my sister, my mom and dad, or my son and daughter? If you're in the market for a new home to live in, a vacation home, or an investment property, if you need to refinance, or if you're a senior that's considering that wonderful financing tool known as a reverse mortgage, and you want the comfort of knowing that you're talking to a company that you can trust to look out for your best interest on one of the largest transactions you'll ever make in your life, call me toll free at 855-640-2020. That's 855-640-2020, day or night, area code 855-640-2020. And listen to my show, The Main Event, Saturdays at 9:30 a.m. and 9 o'clock p.m. and Sundays at 4 o'clock, right here on AM 590, The Answer.
AM 590, The Answer.
Welcome back to Unite IE Radio. This is Greg Britton with my co-host John Hancock and Don Dix. And our guest today is James Bennett, a very fascinating individual who has written a number of books. He's going to be speaking at a conference regarding the Magna Carta in Los Angeles this weekend. As we were talking in the last segment, the Magna Carta was a key foundation in the development of human liberty, ultimately leading to the American Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Welcome back, James.
Thank you.
Tell us about this conference.
Well, I think it's John's conference, but my understanding is the whole point of it is to bring back the relevance of Magna Carta and to show people how the liberties that we enjoy today, much of the structure of our society, is part of a long tradition. It long antedates the American Revolution or even the settlement and founding of America, and that you can trace step by step the relationship between what was done in 1215 at Runnymede to what happens every day when somebody stands up and demands their rights.
And one of the things you mentioned that you write extensively on is what's called the Anglosphere. And I wasn't aware of it until I started exploring this history. And the Anglosphere is really that the English-speaking countries, if you look at them around the world, mainly the prime ones such as Canada, United States, Great Britain, New Zealand, and Australia, you know, even as a kid, I realized there was something that made them the freest and most prosperous nations in the modern world. So what was that? And, you know, de Tocqueville called it the point of departure, that they all originated from England. A lot of Americans don't know, as after he did his trip here and wrote Democracy in America, he went to England or Britain to find out, because he realized that United States and Canada got their roots from England. And this is what this is about. And you know, James, you know, as you write about this, the Anglosphere, you know, these common principles that they're based on really are the ones that have a proven track record of bringing freedom and prosperity to every nation that embraces them. Isn't that right?
Pretty much. If you look at any of the indices of global prosperity, I think right now the top five or six countries are all pretty much English-speaking common law countries. And there's been studies, for instance, Harvard Business did a study comparing countries with otherwise similar cultures, but one of which had been a British colony and continued to use common law, and the other had been the colony of some other European power and used Roman civil law. And the common law countries were always more prosperous. And there's something about this toolkit that makes it very susceptible. But ultimately, it comes down to what you would call, not just in the popular culture sense, but in the anthropological sense, an individualist culture, where a person sees himself as the primary point of reference and defines his relationship to all other people by their relationship to him or her, and by the, in most cases, voluntary ties that you assume. And even when you have genetic ties, when you have family ties to other people, as we all know, there's a great deal of difference between how one person might view their brother or cousin or something and how another person might, because aside from that basic family loyalty, most of the rest of the ties are voluntarily chosen. As you grow up and get older, you kind of decide how much you want to do, as opposed to many other cultures in the world where you have extremely strict defined duties and you don't have any choice about it. And it often means that you don't have full control over your own property for almost all of your life. There are many countries where The father of the family continues to have control over his adult children, including approving or disapproving marriages or even control of their financial futures. And in many countries, that's even written into law. Right. And the English-speaking cultures are all individualistic cultures in the sense that once a person becomes an adult, they really are severed from any forcible connection to anybody else.
So James Bennett,
that means everything we build is built on voluntarily assumed ties, and it's enormously powerful.
If what you say and what John says is true, that these principles are responsible for the most prosperity in the world, then why does academia, meaning our universities, many high schools, most of what I would call upper primary education, and other think tank institutions, and many of our elected officials, why do they embrace principles that take us in a direction that is away from what you guys have said, more in the direction of socialism, Marxism,
collectivism,
statism? What's the rationale for that? Why is that happening?
Well, I would say that it's because social science and the popular concepts that came out and were influenced by that social science took a very wrong turn between about 1850 and 1900. And it is primarily due to the work of Karl Marx and the fact that a group of people relentlessly promoted that concept. And this goes far beyond overtly socialist or communist propaganda or parties that officially embrace it. It crept into academia, and you know, this idea came up that individualism was a byproduct of the Industrial Revolution or the Protestant Reformation or whatever, and that before some date, whether it was 1600 or 1800, but you know, relatively recent in history, nobody was individualistic. So they see individualism as a kind of deformation of character that grew up by a horrible, as they see it, horrible accident. And they have this dream of going back to this sort of mythical collective society that never really existed in the form they think it did. And that, you know, even in England, people were happy collective peasants before some particularly evil turning point in history. Why Alan McFarlane is really important as an anthropologist is that he came into the science when this paradigm was utterly 100% adopted, except for a very few courageous scholars who dissented, particularly the historian James Campbell at Oxford, who he studied under. And Alan came around at a point where all of the village records of England going back to the Norman Conquest had just been put on a computerized database by the government. So was able to start to do detailed research into this, and he said, well, I'm going to go back in history and find out when this transition point happened. When did the English become individualistic? And the further back in time he and his group went, because this was a group of scholars at Cambridge, the farther back they went, they said, geez, we're in the 13th century, and people are still acting like modern people in the sense that they own their property individually. They, you know, govern everything through contracts. You read their diaries, and they think like modern people in that sense. And you finally came to the conclusion that the English have always been individualistic in that sense, and that the politics has always reflected a fundamentally individualistic, property-oriented, voluntary ties-oriented society and mentality, and that all the political ideas of liberty that we have stem from the fact that we have a fundamentally individualist culture, despite the fact that the majority of the people in the United States don't have any English genetic stock in them at this point in history. And haven't for quite a while, but because historically we have always assimilated people to the individualistic culture.
Let me stop you there if I could. We're past time on this segment, so we're gonna have a word from our sponsor, Ed Hoffman of Wholesale Capital Corporation, a great patriot and sponsor of our show. And we'll be back after this, more with Mr. Bennett and his book, America 3.0.
Who do you trust with your real estate financing? We all get our money the same place. We all have the same basic programs. The question is, who has the knowledge and, more importantly, the integrity to advise you with your best interest in mind? Hi, this is Ed Hoffman, President of Wholesale Capital Corporation, your local direct mortgage lender, and host of the main event, heard Saturdays and Sundays right here on 590 The Answer. For over 20 years, Wholesale Capital has been putting your interests first. What would I advise you if you were my brother or my sister, my mom and dad, or my son and daughter? If you're in the market for a new home to live in, a vacation home, or an investment property, if you need to refinance, or if you're a senior that's considering that wonderful financing tool known as a reverse mortgage, and you want the comfort of knowing that you're talking to a company that you can trust to look out for your best interest on one of the largest transactions you'll ever make in your life, call me toll-free at 855-640-2020. That's 855-640-2020, day or night, area code 855-640-2020. And listen to my show, The Main Event, Saturdays at 9:30 a.m. and 9 o'clock p.m. and Sundays at 4 o'clock, right here on AM 590, The Answer.
AM 590, The Answer. Let's get it started.
Welcome back to the Unite IE radio program. My name is Don Dix. I'm here with John Hancock and Greg Britton. And our guest for this half hour, which we're going to carry over to the next half hour, James Bennett. And the topic of our conversation is a document that came into existence 800 years ago that essentially sealed the opportunity for America to exist. We talked about that in the first couple of segments. There is an event that is coming up that John Hancock is actually a part of, one of our regular co-hosts here. And it says here in your bio on this event, people can find out more about it by going to AmericanFreedomAlliance.org. And then there's a large description of the Magna Carta event, which is the celebrating the 800th anniversary of the signing of this document that I said sealed the fate. John, you're listed as one of the speakers at this event. It says you're generally recognized as one of the leading figures in the field of American exceptionalism. That's awesome.
Yes, that was actually...
Just the way you wrote it, John.
Yeah, just the way I wrote it. No, actually, that was recognized by Nick Adams. Had written something about me on that after reading Liberty Inherited.
Awesome. So you're going to be speaking at this event. There's a whole host of speakers here, including our guest here, James Bennett. It looks like John Howard, who was the... 25th Prime Minister of Australia from March 1996 to 2007. He's flying over to be part of this.
He'll actually be through video link.
Okay, a video link. And there's another video link with a friend of yours.
Daniel Hannon, who will actually be doing simulcasting the event, the ceremony at Runnymede. It'll be on delay because of time, but it will be a simulcast of the event at Runnymede. And then Daniel Hannon is going to be addressing the attendees at this event and talking.
And
about
Runnymede is what?
Runnymede is where the Magna Carta was signed 800 years ago.
Gotcha. And I understand that there's a nice little monument there to attest to that fact, right?
Yeah, you know, it's real interesting. The British people, you know, it's been lost on them, the importance of the Magna Carta. There's kind of a resurgent now with the 800th anniversary. But, you know, there's only one monument there. And that was donated in the 1950s by the American Bar Association.
So they never themselves put up a monument. Rather than being interested in the Magna Carta, I think they're more interested in the multi-carta. Multiculturalism is such a big deal over there.
Multi-carterism.
Well, so this is a great event. Now, on the phone with us is one of the speakers, James Bennett, who wrote a book called America 3.0. And in maybe 10 seconds or less, James, can you give us a tease for the next segment as to what America 3.0 is all about?
Well, the basic point of it, the reason why we call it 3.0, is that we think that America is in the middle of a process of transition out of the industrial era into a networked era beyond that, that is equivalent to the transition from the agricultural era at the time of America's founding to the industrial era. And if you look back in history, there was a huge amount of turmoil and struggle and constitutional argument during that first transition from America 1.0 to 2.0. We think the reason there is so much turmoil today and so much stress and potential for more turmoil yet for a period of time is because basically all of the institutions that were created, centralized bureaucratic institutions, of the New Deal and Lyndon Johnson's Great Society.
Hold that thought, because we will be back after our break at the top of the hour with James Bennett, America 3.0, and what we all have to look forward to over the next 50 years. We'll be back after this.
I'll keep my freedom. I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion too.